Welcome back to the Lynn Rivers Show. Well, we're going to make a massive shift in gears here now as we turn to my next guest, U of M business professor and author Andrew Hoffman. His new book, The Builder's Apprentice, was just published by Huron River Press. Dr. Hoffman is the Holcomb Professor of Sustainable Enterprise at the University of Michigan. Within this role, he also serves as Associate Director of the Frederick A. and Barbara M. Erb Institute for Global Sustainable Enterprise. Dr. Hoffman has a PhD from MIT and has published 4 books and over 50 articles or book chapters on environmental and social issues as they relate to business. Welcome, Dr. Hoffman.
Good afternoon.
Well, I'm really excited to talk to you about this because it's a very interesting path that your life has taken. And this is a memoir, this book, The Builder's Apprentice, just put out. Set the scene for us here. Tell us what this story is about.
Okay. It is a story of my own when I was 25. Feeling dissatisfied with what I was doing. I went to college because that's what I was supposed to do with grade 13, 14, 15, and 16, and was getting set to take a job. I took a job with the EPA and was thinking I was doing what I was supposed to be doing, and then got graduate school acceptances to Harvard and Berkeley to continue on that path, and suddenly froze and thought, this isn't what I want to do. This isn't the life I want to be living. And helped a friend build a deck and got a real charge out of it. And started looking in the newspaper and actually answered an ad in the newspaper for a carpentry job in Nantucket. I had to sit down with my parents and say, I'm not going to go to Harvard or Berkeley. I'm going to be a carpenter.
And they said, oh, goody.
Yeah, that was a tense conversation. But they saw the reasoning that I wasn't happy on the path I was on. And I wrote this book thinking about my audience in terms of people who are thinking about, boy, this is what I'm doing, or this is what I should be doing, but this is what I really want to do. And even when people have your best intentions in mind or saying this is a mistake, do it and move forward. Now, what happened from there, you know, that in itself is an interesting story because within 2 years I was supervising a 29,000 square foot house in Connecticut. So that is a second element to the book is what it's like to build homes in general, but also build these really magnificent, very large homes, very, very large custom homes. And so it's a glimpse into a very interesting world. I think of it almost like, you know, the book House, Tracy mm-hmm. Kidder's book, focused more on the architect than the owner. This book goes right into depth on the blue-collar workers that actually make it happen.
Well, when you're talking about skilled trades people, and you're talking about people who have a craft, mm-hmm. There's a certain honor in that. I mean,
yeah.
did you run into people who had not only great skills but tremendous pride in what they did?
You know, most of the people have tremendous pride in what they do. That's the joy of building, is that you see the result of what you did with your hands in front of you at the end of the day, and it's very satisfying. But there are certainly some tradesmen that exemplify that more than others, and there's one in particular in the book, a mason who worked for me. And stonemasonry is really an art, mm-hmm. Less of a craft. And it was really a joy to watch him work and just the pleasure it brought him. He was Italian. He would actually turn on opera while he was doing the stonework. It sounds like a cliche, but it's true. And he was really a pleasure to watch.
Now, for people who have these exquisite skills, these artistic abilities, whether it's in stone or in wood carving or whatever, the demand for that kind of work, I mean, that's a very pricey kind of service. The demand must be diminishing. How do these people maintain their skills? I mean, are they getting enough work to keep the skills, or are they essentially leaving the marketplace?
Well, in the present economy, I'll put on my business school professor hat at the moment, mm-hmm. and the construction industry is one that's gotten hit particularly hard in this economic downturn. And unemployment rates can get up over 25% in some regions.
Mm-hmm.
But I would back up and say that you didn't have to be, you know, a fine woodworker to feel the joy and the pride in your craft. The concrete formwork was something that the concrete contractor took great pride in. It was square, level, and plumb, and you know, no honeycombs. It was a very complex foundation, and he took great pride in delivering exactly what was contracted and doing it in a way that was the highest quality that he could provide. So all the trades, I think, felt that. And I think when they walked on these jobs, this 29,000 square foot house was a monster, and it was a one-of-a-kind home, and every subcontract that came on the job, I think, felt a great deal of pride of being a contributor to the construction of it. Mm-hmm.
Listeners, this is the Lynn Rivers Show here on 89.1 WEMU. My guest today is U of M business professor and author Andrew Hoffman. He has just published a new book, The Builder's Apprentice, which is a memoir about the time he spent as a carpenter as he was on his road to academic ivory towers. Let me go back to something we just talked about for a second here when we were talking about people having a trade or an art and sort of how they view that. Tell us about sort of, for lack of a better way to put it, it's almost as if your soul sort of opened up as you began to get involved in carpentry and hone your skills. What was that like for you?
Well, it was a rather irrational decision to give up an engineering job, give up the desk, work outside, start as a carpenter pounding nails, and then moving on to be a supervisor. It was driven more by my gut and my heart than my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, when I wrote this and think about people reading it, and look around at my students, I see a lot of pressures today for students to start building their resume. Some of them starting as early as like eighth grade. I review applications for scholarships for high school kids, and they're building their resume mm-hmm. from eighth grade. And what you're doing by doing that is saying that, you know, you have to make logical sense out of who you are, and it has to be on paper, and it has to be evaluated by somebody else. And we're losing something in the process, and that is, What work speaks to you? And it doesn't have to be carpentry, and doesn't even have to be a job. I mean, if raising a family is what you think is your calling, then do it. If it's working at a desk, do it. If it's doing finance, do it. But the key being, look inside yourself and decide for yourself what really is that thing that you think you are called here to do. And so the decision I made really met a lot of resistance, and it was a challenge to step out mm-hmm. of one world into another and adopt this new identity. But it was, in the end, a very satisfying one, opening up doors that I didn't know before me.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, at the end of the book, I point out I started out to be a carpenter and then become a builder, a distinction I didn't even know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very exciting realization.
Well, you know, what you're really talking about is people following their bliss is the way the term. But what I'd really like to know is, following your bliss led you to carpentry and to building, and then you apparently followed your bliss back to and back to academia. How did that happen?
Yeah, that's a funny story, and a lot of people push back and say, wait a minute, you can't just sort of drop that towards the end of the book and say, now I'm a professor, but that's a story for another day. But I don't think that you have just one calling in your life, nor do I think that you have just one path. And I like the idea of if a door opens and you're interested and available to step through it, there's nothing that says you have to, because the tyranny of the past and dictating the future is something that you want to be mindful as well. I finished up building that very, very large home and decided I wanted to go back to school to learn to build bigger things like bridges and skyscrapers. And then through a set of circumstances, I found myself offered a free ride for a PhD at MIT while I was there getting my master's in the construction management program, and decided to take it. And that led me down a different path. But it all comes together in the end. My ability to teach things like organizational behavior in a business school draw heavily from my experiences running a construction company. And I just wrote a series of blogs for the Harvard Business Review on this, and that is, you know, things like, you know, we can go into the classroom, we can talk about layoffs or downsizing, but if you've never looked someone in the eye and told them they're fired, you have no idea how hard that is, and mm-hmm. I had to do that dozens of times. Or understanding the connections between reward systems and culture, reporting relationships, and these all fit together, how to trust somebody. So my ability to teach in the classroom is greatly enhanced by my drawing these anecdotes and analogies from my experience running a company and running a construction company.
Mm-hmm. Did you go through a period of second guessing? I mean, as these inklings began to take root that maybe you should go back into an academic program, maybe you should go back to college, graduate school, whatever. Did you want to suppress that? In other words, did you want to say, oh, no, I can't do that after I've made this other, you know, life-changing decision?
Well, when I first, the first job I took as a carpenter, the job ends, and it's the nature of house building, and the guy who owned the company said, I don't have any more work for you. And I decided, well, I've indulged myself enough. I'm going to go back to what I'm supposed to do. And I actually did go back and took a job with an engineering consulting firm. And I lasted about 6 months and realized I'm right back where I was before. I'm sitting at a desk. It's not satisfying. And I quit again and went back to work for the same man in Connecticut and went back for good, well, for 4 years, but went back fully into it. As someone said, I went all in and moved everything and totally committed myself to the work.
Mm-hmm. This is the Lynn Rivers Show. You are listening to 89.1 WEMU. I'm talking today with U of M business professor and author Andrew Hoffman. His new book, The Builder's Apprentice, was just published by Huron River Press. You can get it all over the place, Amazon, Borders, Barnes & Noble as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Fine workmanship. I mean, you're talking about building an extraordinary house, mm-hmm. which means that the ability for sort of exquisite things was there. Lots of people find joy in fine workmanship, in beautiful things, but can't afford that. How could people bring that kind of aspect to their lives? I mean, are there ways that people could benefit or could enjoy fine design or fine workmanship on a financial scale or an economic scale less than what we're talking about here with this big house?
Well, do you mean in terms of someone buying a house or in terms of someone practicing a craft that they draw pleasure from?
Any of those things. In other words, I may want something beautiful in my house, but I don't have the money to go out and hire an Italian stonemason.
Well, you know, a lot of the kind of things that are done in a house, you can learn on your own. It's tricky,
mm-hmm.
but you can give it a try. And I guess my point would be, if you did it yourself, the sense of satisfaction of seeing that every day, even if you make a mistake and have to redo it, is just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But I would also add that, you know, a lot of the things I learned building these very, very large homes, when I left it, I actually was going to try and, my hope was actually when I left that company, I was going to get a degree in architecture and engineering and design and build my own houses.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get into a single architecture school. I got into every engineering school.
Mm-hmm.
That practical experience just didn't seem to be appreciated within architecture schools. But what I wanted to do was take those kinds of experience the skills and the design elements and bring them into smaller homes. There's a really nice book series called The Not So Big House.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the philosophy is simple, that you can buy this big McMansion and buy lots of square footage, and you're going to have these nice plaster walls that have nothing to them, or you can shrink the house and take that extra money and put it into making it a much nicer environment inside, a versatile environment. Do you really need a separate great room, dining room, you know, formal dining room, all these things? Or can you have these rooms be multifunctional, have much more design sense to them, make them much more pleasant spaces? And I believe you can.
Mm-hmm. There appears to be, at least on the surface, sort of this you work building these big houses for rich people in the very ostentatious 1980s. And now, in the more frugal times we live in, you teach sustainability.
Yeah.
Where did you cross that bridge? Or are these things not inconsistent with one another?
Well, there is a tension there. I mean, I started my first, before going into construction, I worked for the EPA. I wanted to clean up the environment. And now I teach sustainability. And actually teach a course on green construction.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, part of green construction is how much square footage does the average person need? And certainly 29,000 square feet is outside the scope of what an average
yes.
person needs. And I have to admit also that, you know, that house used a lot of large dimension redwood, clear heart redwood in the 6x6, 8x8, 8x12, lots of really, really expensive redwood, and I had to confess to a certain amount of guilt the first time I went to Muir Woods.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're works of art. I'm not going to be an apologist for it, but I'm not going to feel guilty for it either. It's part of my life, and And fine craftsmanship doesn't necessarily have to be something that is seen as just a gift for the rich. The workmen and women who worked on that job are tremendously proud of what they've done, and that house will be there for a good long time. It is a steel infrastructure. It's very, very well built.
A little while ago, you said we were talking about resume building. You got kids in junior high. I would suggest you've got mothers of toddlers who are already trying to build a resume for their kids. And in an academic community like this, you talk about vocational education. You talk about learning a trade. You talk about working with your hands, and people run screaming in the opposite direction. Speak to this issue of having an ability, a trade, whether you practice that or not. What is the value of being able to do things?
Yeah. Well, Matthew Crawford has been writing about this in the past few years. He has a bookshop class, Soulcraft, and he's trying to point out that we undervalue the trades. That, you know, we live in a society right now that says that everyone's supposed to go to college. Everyone's supposed to be a white-collar worker, and that just simply isn't the case. And it's also, if you do choose to go into the trades, you're seen as somehow lacking ambition, or you're somehow, there's something
competent.
Wrong with you.
Yes, less competent, less smart. Mm-hmm.
And that's really unfortunate because, you know, this is the work that, first of all, is going to stay here. I mean, a lot of stuff can be shipped overseas, but fixing your car, building your house, that has to be done here.
Mm-hmm.
And we rely on these people to make society go, you know. And I do think that we live in a time right now where people are fascinated by this work. Look at the popularity of shows like Dirty Jobs or The Most Deadly Catch or The Ice Road Truckers. I mean, people are fascinated by those who actually do the work to keep society going. And I saw an interview with Mike Rowe, and he captured it quite nicely. He said that he felt that the tradespeople were the most self-actualized people in the world, that they come in and there's a problem, and they fix it, and then they're done. Thank you very much, ma'am. And they're on their way, self-actualized.
Right, that's wonderful.
And I look at the contrast in the world I lived in and the world I live in now. If someone walked into one of the houses I built and looked me and said, this is a piece of junk, I'd look them dead in the eye and say, you don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I want to thank you for sharing this story with us. It's been wonderful to talk with you.
Thank you.
That's U of M business professor, author Andrew Hoffman. His new book is The Builder's Apprentice. And you can join me next time for another edition of the Lynn Rivers Show. We'll talk about the news, politics, and we look forward to seeing you then, right here on 89.1 WEMU.